Dear Heavenly Father, I want to thank you so much, Lord, for your grace and your faithfulness that is new every morning. I want to thank you for the blessings that we have experienced so far, and for the inspiration that we have received as we've been listening to different mission reports and activities that are going on in different parts of the world, also in the lines of medical missionary work. And Lord, we want you to inspire us today. We're also going to brainstorm and think of ways that we can be involved, that in ways how we can apply the principles that we've spoken about in our own life, and also how we can be able to, in a practical way, in our situation and in our community, that we can reach out with the right arm of the gospel to open doors for your truth to enter their hearts. And I want to pray that you'll bless this last session that we're going to have together. I want to pray that your spirit may be present, that it may not be human thoughts and human words, but that it will be words or inspiration, words from you. And I want to thank you for the precious message that you have given us as Seventh-day Adventists, and that you are God that cares for all the different aspects of life. And this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so last session, just to do a short summary. Last session, we were starting on this history of the health work in the Advent history. And we were looking at how, especially on the first vision that Ellen White received in 1863. And some of the content of that vision and how this was far beyond, far before her time, actually, when you... beyond. Exactly, yeah. It was, yeah, exactly. It was beyond her time. So, and we had some interesting discussions and some dialogues, and we were not able to finish up everything that I prepared, but that was totally fine, because I thought it was super interesting to listen to you guys and all your insights. And so what we'll do is that we will just go briefly through some all the last points that I was planning to go through in the last session, and then we will move on into the third session, which is some of the basics of the medical missionary work, and also then that we're going to brainstorm and think about how we can apply these principles in our own life and how we can use them to win souls for Christ. And I think the last slide that we closed off with last session was this from Spiritual Gifts, where we talked about the relationship that in this first vision that Ellen White received in 1863, she not only received light on many issues relating to health that was far beyond her time, but that it was also strong emphasis on the close relationship between diet and lifestyle and spiritual health. And I think we all agree that this is one of the main reasons also why God has given us the health message, because as we apply the health message in our own lives, we will have a clearer mind to comprehend the things of God. And as we also share the health message with other people that maybe so far are not open to spiritual things, just because they don't see that they have a spiritual need, but they see that they have a physical need. And in turn, as we help them with their physical needs, their mind clears up. And the way is prepared that they can receive the truths. Because we do not, our aim or end goal is not to make healthy sinners, but it is that they shall be saved and that they shall be able to live for eternity together with God. That is our goal, and that goal we always need to keep in mind. Because many times there is a tendency, and I think we talked about it in our group yesterday also, it is a tendency that we take the health work only so far, and then we are afraid for this bridge into the spiritual dimension, which is so important, both for the mental health of people and, of course, for their salvation. And I want to share a short quote with you from one that is called J.H. Wagner. And he's not the typical Wagner that we think about, because many times when we hear the word Wagner, we think about Jones and Wagner and the 1888 message that I guess many of you have heard about. This J.H. Wagner, he was the father of the Wagner that we think about. And he was very active in the health movement in the very beginning of the Adventist movement as it developed. He was one of those that were most foremost in standing up for this health reform and this special light that Ellen White had received from God on the topic of health. It's told, actually, that the day that he accepted the Sabbath truth, he threw his tobacco into the stove. And that was the end of it. And since that, he was a mighty spokesman for the temperance movement. He was actually also the first editor of the Pacific Health Journal and the American Sentinel, that is on religious liberty. But he was also the first editor of the health magazine that Adventist Church had. And he also was actually an editor of the Signs of the Times, that maybe even more of us are familiar with. After James White died, he was the one that followed as the editor of that magazine. But he points out the uniqueness of the health message that we have as Adventists, because at this time in the 1800s, there were actually others that were also advocating health reforms, kind of. You can read about how spiritualistic movements would also have health as one of their the things that they emphasized. And I guess we can very much associate with that in our society today, because who is actually stealing the show when it comes to health many times today? New Age, right, exactly. And they are actually taking the mission maybe even more serious than we are.
They do it for the same reason, to clear the mind, to have these
spiritual experiences. Yeah, that's true. But it was very unique, as you know, Ellen White received these visions on health and saw the relation that health also has to salvation, you know, or that it has to for our eternal life, that is not only for this life but also for our eternal life. And so this was Wagner was saying about these developments. And he said that as mere physiological and hygienic truths, the principles of health reform might be studied by some at their leisure, at their free time, isn't it? At their leisure. And by others laid aside as a little consequence. But when placed on a level with the great truths of the third angel's message by the sanction of God's Spirit, and so declared to be made strong to overcome, and to our deceased bodies cleansed and fitted for translation, then it comes to us as an essential part of present truth to be received with the blessing of God or rejected at our peril. And basically what he's pointing out is that, you know, the health message is not just like, yeah, sure, you can do it and you can, you know, live a few more years. It's like something you study on your leisure time, something interesting. For us as Adventists, it didn't only become like something that is a point of interest beside all other interests, but it actually had a direct relationship to salvation, in the sense that the body is a complete thing, body, mind, and soul. We have a creator that has given us, you know, physical laws, spiritual laws. And as we come into harmony with these laws, then we will be better able to have a close connection with our creator and to prepare for the eternal life. So as we follow on with the history of the health work and the health reform in the Adventist Church, actually 2.5 years after Ellen White received this first vision in 1863. During these 2.5 years, it was continual progress, and this message that, or this light that she received, it was spreading in the church. And on Christmas Day in 1865, so 2.5 years after she received the first vision on health reform, there was a new progress that was called for. And she received the second major health vision. And in this vision, it was indicated that there was a need to go a step further. There was a need to not only implement these truths or this light in our own lives, but that we also had a responsibility to share this light with other people around us. And in this vision, it was then indicated that the denomination should start a health institution, a place where people could learn not only about, you know, some of the things that, like I said, at that time, it was also some increased interest in health, and they had some of these water cure institutions. But many times it was a spiritualist that had their strange ideas mixed into these things. And so, yes, even back then, yeah, we were just talking about how it is so similar today, you know, with a New Age movement that are running with this message today, you know, or the health part of it. But this should, this institution should make available both to the church and to the world the united gospel of physical and spiritual restoration. And this was a huge step. I mean, this call from the Lord was a huge step for this little movement at that time. But in 1866, so less than a year after she received this vision, on September 5th, the first health institute was established. And that was called the Western Reform Institute. And it's the picture that you see to the right, to the, exactly, exactly. So, and that was the very small beginning, actually, for what we maybe know as the Battle Creek Sanatorium. And it is told that in the beginning, it was a very humble beginning. They had only 10 rooms in the institute, 2 doctors, 2 bath attendants, several helpers, and 1 patient. So that was a small beginning. But only 10 years later, so in 1876, the institution had 100 beds. And at this time, Dr. Kellogg came into the picture. And I guess most of you heard about him. He was just 23 years, I think, at that time. He was young, and he was short, and he was despised because he looked so young and he looked so small. So they thought, what in the world will this guy do? But he proved that he had very strong abilities and that he was a very talented doctor. And after a short while, actually, the Battle Creek Sanatorium was world-known, and many very known personalities also came to this sanatorium to get help. It's interesting, in the beginning of his practice, or in the beginning of his ministry, you could say, he had very much success, and he was always, on average, they said at least he was 5 years ahead of all the other doctors. And one of his assistants, they asked him, what is actually the secret, Dr. Kellogg, behind that you have so much success compared to all the other doctors of your days? And then he said, okay, I will tell you the secret of my success. And we're going to read the secret of his success. This is referring to this dialogue that he had together with his assistant. He said, when a new thing is brought out in the medical world, he knew from his knowledge of the spirit of prophecy, whether it belonged in our system or not. If it did, he instantly adopted it and advertised it, while the rest of the doctors were slowly feeling their way. And when they finally adopted it, he had 5 years start of them.
He actually lived in the white home.
Uh-huh.
He was a very poor boy.
Uh-huh.
And they supported him through medical school.
That's right, yeah. Mm.
So he had a very good relationship.
Very strong relationship, yeah. She had almost been like a mother to him.
Just like a mother to him, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So he had the greatest respect for her.
Yeah, yeah.
In the beginning.
In the beginning, exactly. That's right. And then it says here that, so when there was something new coming out that was, you know, then if it was in accordance with spiritual prophecy, he was just running with it, just advertising it at once. But on the other hand, when the medical profession were swept off their feet by some new fad, if it did not fit with the light we had received, he simply did not touch it. When the doctors finally discovered their mistake, they wondered how it came that Dr. Kellogg did not get caught. And I just thought this, I thought it was so interesting to read this communication between him and his assistant and to see, because even for us today, and I think most of you have maybe noticed that as well, it is conflicting, you know, when you look in medical science, for example. We've even had that in class, you know, talking about some conflicting arguments about health. You know, we are using, of course, the sources. If you read, for example, Dr. Neil Nedley and the research that he's using, it is in accordance with the spirit of prophecy. But of course, then somebody else may say, but there's some research here, you know, and it proves the opposite. But I think it's so important for us actually to follow the same thing as Kellogg was following, and that made him be at least 5 years ahead of all the others. Because God has given us light. And who knows most? The last medical science thing or God? I mean, God is our creator. He has made the body. He has made this machinery. He has the owner's manual for how it runs. And so it's best that we ask him first. And then, you know, what corresponds with that, that we can run with. But the other things we should discard. And I think that's important for us to keep in the back of our mind, because we will definitely all be meeting conflicting arguments, even from other science. But we have to have a strong foundation, and that is the inspired Word of God, you know, the revelation that God has given to us. Yeah, and in closing for this about Adventist history. Of course, we could go more into the thing about Kellogg, but since we have limited time, I think most of you know that, just like Sven Arvid was saying, in the beginning he was very closely following along with the, you know, the counsels that Ellen White was giving to him, and he had a lot of respect for her. But but Dr. Kellogg, unfortunately, he also was swept off the path, and it was especially these pantheistic ideas that really caught him, the power of God in nature. Not just that God's power and love is seen in nature, and that God is the creator and that he's working through nature, and that nature has curative powers because God the creator has laid that in nature, but he started to refer to nature as God in nature, which is the pantheistic, exactly.
It was in fact, we published that in the Real Herald.
That's right. Yeah.
And the Lord burned it down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right afterwards.
Yeah. So, and they tried to stop the fire and it didn't work. So that was very clear, the connection there. He was stubbornly following the course that she warned him not to follow. And this is actually what was called the Alpha Apostasy. Hmm. And so even today, Daniel was actually speaking about that shortly in his first meeting. How that even today, that some of these spiritual paths that you saw back in those days in the Alpha Apostasy is coming back today and is entering Christianity. Some of these Eastern ways are entering Christianity and even our own church. And we have to be aware of this, because it was an attack in the very beginning of our movement. And we can just expect, because what also said that this will come back. And she says, I fear for it, you know, the Omega Apostasy. So we can expect that some of these same things, or Eastern mysticism, New Age, pantheistic and panentheistic ideas will be coming back in our day and age, and we see it, and we have to be aware of it.
It's because of the disregard by what the Lord has told.
Exactly.
They lose confidence in
The spiritual prophecy, in the prophetic gift. And that's why it is so important also that we treasure this gift that God has given to us. You know, He has given us light as a people, and we need to treasure that, because putting aside the light that God has given us is not very thankful. It's darkness, that's true. Okay, so as we close off and cut it short in righteousness, I hope, the sequence about the Adventistry, I just want to share with you one experience, and this is from 1901. And maybe, how many of you have heard Ted Wilson's annual speech, or annual council speech, or whatever you call that? How many heard that last year and this year? It was so inspiring, and it was about the city missions and the health evangelism, what he called comprehensive health evangelism or something. And he was actually sharing this quote, so maybe you heard some of it before, but he was sharing an example of what was taking place in San Francisco, and Ellen White received a vision. She actually first received a vision where she saw two beehives. And in one of them, and the one beehive was San Francisco, and it was very little activity there. But then the vision changed, and she actually saw that it would become a beehive of activity, as she, that's a Bienen House. Yeah. So it would be very busy activity that would be like, in a sense, an example of what should happen in, you know, all cities. All the big cities. And we've also heard here in the main hall about the call for city evangelism and the plans that also we have as a church for city evangelism in many of the large cities of the world. And I just wanted to share this with you as an inspiration, with some practical examples of what they were doing at that time. And maybe this can also be some inspiration for us with some inputs that we can run with as we come into our discussion in the end of how we can implement all these things. So she writes here that there are many lines of Christian effort being carried forward by our brethren and sisters in San Francisco. These include visiting the sick and the destitute. And I appreciated Joachim's worship this morning. How many of you heard that one? It was, just to summarize it, it was basically a worship based on Isaiah 58 and the message that God has given to us, that we really have a task to care for humanity and to show our faith in a very practical way in daily life, and to be there for the needs of humanity, and to do true medical missionary work, which is all about relieving the sufferings in this world. And she says here that these include visiting the sick and the destitute, finding homes for orphans, and work for the unemployed, nursing the sick, and teaching the love of Christ from house to house, the distribution of literature, and the conducting of classes for healthful living, and the care of the sick. A school for the children is conducted in the basement of the meeting house. In another part of the city, a working men's home and medical mission is maintained. On Market Street, near the city hall, there is a bath established, operated as a branch of the St. Helena Sanatorium. In the same locality is a depot of the health food company, where health foods are not only sold, but instruction is given as to reforms in diet. Nearer the center of the city, our people conduct a vegetarian cafe, which is open 6 days in the week and is entirely closed on Sabbath. Here about 500 meals are served daily, and no flesh meats are used. Dr. and Mrs. Dr. Lam are doing much medical work for the poor in connection with their regular practice. And Dr. Buchanan is doing much free work at the working men's home. At the medical and dental schools in the city, there are about 20 of our young people in attendance. We earnestly hope that the steps taken in the future in the work in San Francisco will still be steps of progress. The work that has been done there is but a beginning. Yes?
It's concerning Dr. Kellogg and the work that he did also. It was very interesting. I listened to a presentation once, and they mentioned about all his activities done for, let's say, as we heard, he was an orphan as well, and he had a lot of orphanages. But the problem was that it just stopped there. It was not, you know, introducing Christ to the people. So he was very active in it, doing work for the people, but it didn't get too far from that. And we should also have always our main aim as actually saving them for eternity, not just from poverty.
Totally.
So, I mean, it's already been said here in the statement, but just connection to what we talked about.
Yeah, yeah. Very true. Very true. And I think this is very important that we emphasize that also. We were just talking about it yesterday, actually, that in many of our health institutions, I mean, we can just admit it, that many times we have lost the identity that we actually have, you know, that this is a Seventh-day Adventist institution, and we are fearful, actually, to evangelize because we're afraid to push people away. But what is the whole purpose, you know?
Mostly an economic question. When you start accepting funds from the
state
they dictate
exactly.
If you don't have the money, you do as they say.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. And you know, I think this is also a trust aspect, you know. Somehow we start to lose the trust in God that He's actually the provider of all. And we start to rely upon the state rather than God's.
In that respect, it's Fredheim is doing the right thing.
Exactly. We have a health institution in Norway that is called Fredheim. It's just one of the examples. There are other institutions like that. But it is a self-supporting institution. And they have decided to be free and that it is a trust, a faith-based work that they are doing. And it's just amazing results. And they, you know, they endeavor to follow the principles that we have received as a people. And the blessing of God rests, you know. People are changed. People come out healed, you know. And I think this is really a trust aspect, like we talk about. I mean, that we trust that God, when He has given us these things.
It's the call to faith.
Exactly. Then we have to believe it. And we have to believe that He's the one that owns the cattle on the thousand hills. Yeah. Joachim?
Maybe it's just because I saw St. Helena was mentioned there, and a very positive note.
Yeah.
And how many of you know this book, China Study, by Douglas Campbell? There's a little paragraph on St. Helena Hospital, and it's very sad because it's a very bad picture painted of the Adventist. They're doing the medical work for the money. That's basically what it's saying in there. But by God's grace, we can turn that picture around one more time. If we really grasp the opportunity now, make an effort by God's grace.
We visited St. Helena this autumn. And a friend of ours told us that Ellen White actually was living in a house on campus of St. Helena. I didn't know that. She was very, very tied to the health institution for those years. And it was really going beautiful at that time. But like you're saying, money started taking off.
To the extent they're not even supporting, at least not very much, the natural healing. So that the non-Adventists that came there to work, I guess, if you're on with it anyway, I don't have to...
And then this has happened all through health in Adventism. We have employed doctors, we have employed nurses, we have employed administrators, and they have voted to run a race that is independent of the General Conference, and our beliefs as such, because the majority of them are no longer Seventh-day Adventists. So it's sad. It's still called the Seventh-day Adventist institution, but this is the fact.
Identity is lost. Yeah.
Identity
is lost. Yeah. And it's interesting. Just like we heard now, you know, about in church history with the formation, the deformation and the reformation. I believe that's the same also when it comes to the health work. Like I said, you know, in the beginning, there was a formation. I mean, God gave the principles and they were followed and it was a huge blessing. But then we can just admit it. It was a deformation. It has been a deformation. And I mean, we're part of that blame. And we need to do what we can to restore that picture, to cause a reformation, also when it comes to the health work, right? Okay, so
there's one thing that struck me when you were reading about that beehive activity.
Yeah.
That was written in 1901.
Yeah.
5 years prior to Hanumai says the whole city would be struck by a terrible disaster. So I was wondering do you know how things were running at the point of the earthquake?
When it was struck?
In 1906. It was hit by a massive earthquake in 1906. Hanumai says it's going to happen again when Jesus comes.
That's interesting. It was like God's call of mercy in a sense, all that activity before the destruction. And of course, now we know that we're also before as destruction, not just of a city, but, you know, and we really need to also take the call, you know, to do that work of preparation.
That city was destroyed.
Yeah. Just when you say that, just to drop in, we were in New Zealand when this earthquake struck Christchurch in last year. We were actually in the air when it struck, but... just talking about that, just before the last meeting that was held before the earthquake struck, it was about the Sabbath. And we had decision cards. It was David Ashrick that held the last meeting because he was just closing off and Daniel was going to continue. And the last meeting that he had, it was on the Sabbath. And they had given out the decision cards for people to, you know, make decisions. And I remember we came in afterwards and we started to do visitation work to visit these contacts, of course, after the earthquake. And it was one that had decided for baptism. And when we came to his place, the house was totally smashed, just, you know, leveled with the ground. But it's just, you know, again, I was just reminded of it when you say the thing with San Francisco and the earthquake and how actually God gave a message of mercy before the destruction. And... we never found him. So he probably died, yeah. But he had made a decision. You know, but it was just, I just was reminded of that with what you said, you know, that God gives this message of mercy before the destruction. And we can see that, like you pointed out, you know, how this earthquake came afterwards. But that, you know, the people of God actually responded and took up the work. And this is the same that we need to do now. I mean, we need to respond and to take up the work. Okay, so we'll go into just shortly, and I think for most of you that are here, you're maybe quite familiar with some of the basics of the medical missionary work. But we can repeat it together, and afterwards we'll just have an open discussion and see how we can apply these things also. But what are, you know, you have like the traditional ways, so just, you know, the traditional medical ways, whatever. And then what is actually distinguishing, or what are actually the basic principles behind, you know, nature's way compared to using just chemicals or whatever? And we know that the physical, like we talked about, God, he's not only the originator of the Ten Commandments, but he is also the originator of the physical laws or the laws that he has laid down in nature. And if we play on team with nature, you could say, if we abide or obey those laws that he has laid down in nature, then health will be the result of that. If we transgress, then sickness will be the result. So it's a cause and effect relationship here. And maybe we could turn to Exodus. Yeah, I have it on the screen also. We can turn to Exodus chapter 15 and verse 26. And I guess you know this verse, but it's not a problem to repeat either. Exodus 15:26, and there he says, God says, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. So we see this principle that God has ordained certain laws, and if we abide with those laws, then the blessing of God will follow that. And God says, I love the way he says it, you know, I'm the Lord your physician, or I'm the Lord who heals you. And it's a promise that is in this verse that, you know, if we will abide, if we will obey those laws that God has laid down for spiritual well-being, for physical well-being, they're all coming from God, then he will also keep us in health. And the diseases of Egypt that we're talking about here, they are prevalent in our world today too. Actually, they have found out, I think, by looking into some of the diseases that were prevalent in Egypt. It was things like cancer, you know, that is taking so many lives even today worldwide. And arthritis and so on and so forth. Many of the diseases are very prevalent in our world today. They were also the diseases of Egypt. And
you know, the Egyptians were experts in preserving
with the embalming. Yeah.
Put the intestines in jars, kept
them. Yeah, exactly. And in that sense, we can learn about the diseases that they had at that time also. Did you have a comment?
I don't know if you are going to mention that, but mm-hmm. What's interesting is that they also archaeologically find out what their diet was, mm-hmm. and which classes got what kind of diseases.
Yeah.
The higher class got the lifestyle disease, yeah. The lower class got the infectious disease.
Super interesting.
And those that got the lifestyle disease got it because the diet was mainly meat and refined flour, refined bread, honey, at least much more than the poor people. Cake, and high fat, high protein diet.
Exactly.
That's what they found out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's what we see today.
Yeah, it's so true. And I mean, even today, we call it diseases of affluence, you know, like the typical lifestyle diseases. When you talk about third world diseases, it's usually other things, you know, like, more due to lack of hygiene. But the affluence diseases, it is, of course, related very much to diet and lifestyle, that we have a too much fat and protein in the diet from the wrong sources and too little exercise. Basically. But it's interesting to see how history repeats itself. It's very interesting. Okay.
Heart buried. Pastor always said the disease we have today, they are mainly because of the bad diet we have nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really proven that these, like cancer,
mm-hmm.
and how do you say it?
Heart blood vessel disease.
Heart blood vessel disease.
Mm.
I've been there, like at Egypt, at the time of where Egypt was a big nation already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that proven? Is that really? I mean, cancer, yes, but what is it? Heart, blood vessel. Is that also a bad disease?
I'm
dealing with those back then as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They make X-rays and they can measure the mineral deposit in some main arteries in the body and see that they probably. Diets,
heart
disease, and obesity.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
it?
Nobody knows that. I mean, it's like nowadays, it's a disease of our Western modern way of living.
Yeah.
It's been before.
Yeah. And it's true, it's because of a Western way of living, but it was also before Egypt was a rich nation, and like Joachim said, in those classes that had the rich life. Huh. With that also came the same things that are, you know, when we talk about diseases or affluence, it's also, you know, the same thing relating to diet and lifestyle. Hmm.
Just to say that people are actually aware of this, even outside of the church.
Yeah.
I mean, in my course material for urology, they've already, just as a paragraph, they mentioned that, well, we've discovered in mummies also kidney stones.
Hmm.
So, it's nothing
That was interesting to get it from your perspective, from your study direction, and to, yeah. Yeah, maybe, say.
But maybe we are more looking for these things and paying attention to them than some of the other students that are just reading everything without a special focus.
Mm.
So I think therefore we remember that, and I read my books with a totally different glasses than they do.
Hmm.
But then it's easier for you also to discuss with them and reason with them, if you know that they also have read the same material.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity to... Exactly, and I loved it. When they had a mission report, these guys... was it from Romania? Or... No. What were they? Yeah, Enad, yeah. And to see that there are, you know, these movements where... you know, there is a focus about implementing and using the opportunity in your study situation to actually be a witness for God. Who said that? I think it was Derek Morris. He said, you know, maybe even, you know, like physician study is a long study, and we don't know if Jesus is going to come back before, you know, we're able to be finished with our study and to start working. But to use the opportunity in every situation we are at, and exactly such opportunities... are, of course, ways to...
That's working for God.
Yeah, exactly, to reach a certain class that others would not reach. I mean, me by door knocking or something, maybe I would never be able to, or Daniel preaching an evangelistic meeting series or something, would maybe never be able to reach the same one that you reach, being a fellow student on a campus and studying in the same direction. You know, so it's, yeah. Okay, so in connection with that, these physical laws are originated by God, and I have a quote here from the book Healthful Living, page 17. And there it says that the transgression of physical law is transgression of God's law. Our creator is Jesus Christ. He is the author of our being. He is the author of the physical law, and he is the author of the moral law. And the human being who is careless and reckless or the habits or practices that concern his physical life and health sins against God. God is not reverenced, respected, or recognized. This is shown by the injury done to the body in violation of physical law. So when we talk about, you know, the basics for this understanding of what is health concept that we have is all about, we have to understand the foundation that it is not only the spiritual laws that are ordained by God, but that God has also ordained the physical laws or the laws of nature.
Mm. What is your view upon the question of the health message as being not a salvational issue? Well, salvational issue. Do we have time for discussion?
Yeah, sure. I love the discussion. I'm not like I have to get through everything here, you know. You can get the PowerPoints afterwards, and I think it's very interesting to bring up these things. So I'm totally open for that.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to hear
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, like, the thoughts about how health is relating to salvation, if it is like salvational kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that? The others, or you guys? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I found the best statement I think I ever read in this. It's written by someone called Julius Gilbert White. He was a teacher at the Madison School, started by Sutherland and McGann.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a textbook for them that they used in the health course
mm-hmm.
at that school. And he said the very best thing we can do is to eat the best quality of food that is available and that is accepted, clean food.
Mm-hmm.
So the Eskimo, I mean, mm-hmm. so much you can eat, you have to eat clean fish.
Yes.
That's healthy form in the north of Canada. In Mongolia, it might be lamb or something else, sheep instead of pork.
Mm-hmm.
The very best thing to do is to get the best food available. That's health reform, and you can always do that.
Can you turn it to the beginning of this? The physical. What is the physical law? Is that vegan? You know, many people. You know what I mean. Also, is that you know?
What lies in that expression?
Well, how far do you have to go to not transgress the physical law?
Yeah, good question.
Because many wonder about that.
Yeah, very good question. Jeska?
I was just thinking that there are two different things here. We've all sinned, and we would never come to heaven by doing a lot of good deeds. But we are saved because Jesus died for us. We could never ourselves cleanse this sin from our lives.
Exactly.
And then, because we love him, we will serve him. And that, I think it's quite easy. You don't have to split it up. He has died for every one of us because we are sinners. And then, afterwards, we want to follow him in love, and that means every part of our lives. It's just as Jesse said, and then we will just surrender everything, and that means everything. And that doesn't just mean that, okay, now we read the Bible and we don't, we are not aggressive to our siblings or whatever. It means so much more than having a Christian behavior or going to church. It will affect every part of our lives, and then God will show us what these physical laws are and what is best for us, and then all these things will make us fitted for heaven. Because if we want to live in heaven, then she writes, then we will have to learn to like the heavenly things. And that's not only liking to be in an atmosphere where everything is love. If you are yourself not loving, but I mean also liking the food out there, or the music, or everything.
Okay. Yes.
So, Jeska, if I understood you right, actually, what is the condition of salvation? Is if you're willing to surrender everything to Christ, right? And I like that idea very much. So, you know, we are on our way to heaven. It's a progressive walk, and you know, maybe someone understands the light that I have a responsibility over my body, and I should do the best of it, out of it. But then, if I don't care, then who am I actually serving? Myself, right? Not Christ. So, as you said, I just.
I think those people that have problems with the health reform, they feel attacked because they fear, maybe often because humans are telling it to them, other people, that, and maybe also their own conscience, that they are doing something that they know is wrong and they feel attacked, but they want to just, you know, and it's difficult because, as you say, it's a progress and you cannot tell someone everything in one day. But I think often people are reacting so offended is because they actually know what is right, but they have a difficult time doing it. Maybe they haven't gotten the help they need how to implement it, and they feel maybe everything nice is taken out of their lives. Everything
is good.
Daniel?
Yeah, and you can tell, was heißt denn Geschmackszellen?
The taste buds.
Took my taste buds, like I'm used to get used to soy milk and whatever we consume, and I think it's in the process of non-sanctification. You're just getting there. And so I would say, yes, it is a salvational issue,
But I wouldn't argue with people like at a church potluck, you know, with the lady who brought the coffee and the cake with a lot of sugar. I mean, I think as it is a process, I wouldn't like hit people on their heads, like telling them they are not saved if they don't answer to that. So I think everybody's getting there, and the orders are preparing everybody.
So not bad.
James and Elway, they had a good marriage. How long were they married? He died. Elway says he died way early. I think she was a widow for somewhere around 30 years.
Yeah, maybe close. She died in 1915 and he died in 1880-something.
Why did he die? Did he keep the laws of health? I'm sure he ate right.
Temperance in all things.
That also includes the physical law.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I know for my own part, exercise has been a problem for me, still is. That will also bring things in its place if it's not corrected. And I think it has to do with attitude. You know, if Ellen White's husband was proud about the way he was living, and he knew it was wrong. He knew it was very wrong. And she knew it was wrong. She even pointed out it was wrong. But he was humble about it. He admitted it. And he tried his very best, you know, the few years he had left after the damage was done. And I think we'll see James White in heaven. I'm sure we'll see him in heaven, but he sinned against the physical laws.
Mm-mm.
There's no doubt about that.
So,
in any case, whether we sin against God's moral law or his physical law, I think when our eyes are open to the fact that we are sinning, how do we relate to that? Do we defend ourselves? Do we do like some people do, get terribly offended and when they, get poked at, feel poked at? I think it has very much to do with our attitude.
Very true.
Then it's a question of self-discipline.
Exactly.
But the funny thing is, first is it's a question of self-discipline, but then if your taste buds, as soon as they are changed, you don't like the other food anymore. So it's somehow crazy. I mean, I always feel bad for the ones whose taste buds haven't changed yet, because for us it's like we eat the unhealthy food and you think this is so intense, it tastes so intense, that's not like nature taste, and so it's so easy to live healthy once your taste buds have adapted.
But isn't that the same with all the things, all the things that God has asked us to do? Like in the beginning it's like strange and hard for us, but then it's like with the habits, and these patterns that are created, the more times you do it, the more easy it is. And then the things that, like Paul said, the things that I thought was gain before, I just count as trash now, So it's like how this changes. And I just wanted to also comment, and we'll come back to that afterwards, but what you said, Svanarvid, it's very important that we look at this holistic picture when it comes to health, because as Adventists, many times we talk about very specific things, like, for example, the diet, but also temperance in work or in exercise, and all these things come into the picture, and we'll come back to that, what actually physical law involves. It's one of the slides further down in the row, but we'll give you a comment first.
Yes. First, when I decided to become a vegan or vegetarian, it wasn't so much out of devotion to God. It was rather, I want to be like Dan and the smartest. I don't know.
Selfish reason, no.
We have to know.
I'm kidding.
So we have to understand also why we do this. It's in order for God to be seen clearer in us.
Amen.
So, many times I feel like, should I memorize all these arguments about why I should eat this and why not? Maybe for the people outside, but the biggest argument for us why we should do this is because God asks us to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, there will always be pros and cons, but I think we've gotten enough proof to follow the truth. And just be convinced that this is what God has to say.
Exactly.
The strange thing with God is that he very seldom explains why. He's just like my dad used to ask me, he said, I want you to do this. And I said, why? He said, because I said so. I hated it. But, you know, that's the way God sometimes does. He said, no, you do it because I said so. I want you to have faith in what I've said makes sense, and even though you don't understand it, I still want you to do it.
Exactly, and that
because very rarely do you see why he explains. You know, he doesn't usually explain why.
Even when, just to take an example of that, even when God, you know, made a distinguishment between the clean and the unclean meats, he didn't say, don't eat pork. I mean, if you're going to eat meat, eat rather these ones, because pork, you know, the swine doesn't have the same sweating ability, and so it keeps many of the toxins. You know, he was not actually explaining the whole thing that we know today, why it is actually more unhealthy. Maybe they wouldn't even understood. But it is like this trust aspect, you know, the trust of the Father. When he says that, we know it. And maybe in due time he will reveal it to us. And many of the things, I mean, we live in an age where we have received so much light and so much understanding, actually, and where we've even got explanations for the things, you know, the light that God has revealed to his people. We have a lot of those explanations nowadays.
Same with labor unions, stay out of them. So why would you stay out of labor unions? It doesn't make sense today, but it's going to make sense one day.
Make sense.
Because they will be one of the forces, like Sunday laws and stuff. You know?
It has
just
to do with faith.
Believe to the testimony.
It's true.
It's true. It's difficult because we had just passions in Sam school about it. There was a guy, labor union guy.
Yeah.
I can be really totally freaked out.
Okay, Joachim has had his hand up for a while.
God didn't tell us why, but he told us something else. He said, he told us, go find out.
Exactly. And that's okay.
And that's what we have to do. And so now we're finding out all these things out.
I don't think God is at all finding out.
He actually encourages us to do it.
But he doesn't, many times he does not explain why.
That's our part, because he knows that we will get so much out of it. We'll learn so much from finding out, taking him at his word, and then finding out why it works.
True.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think I've already said some of the things I think, but I'll continue in the presentation. What did you mean exactly about what?
The question of the beginning, is it a salvational issue?
Okay. Maybe we should sum up then and make a conclusion on the salvational issue thing. Okay. Well, I think actually you just got it in quite a nice way, so I don't need to repeat the same words as that, you know, otherwise it's just a repetition. But I think it's all about, exactly as she said, it's not about, you know, my works, that if I'm a vegan, if I do all these things right, you know, then I'll work my way to heaven. It's nothing about that, you know. Salvation is by grace alone through faith, you know, and that's very important to have as a foundation. But, of course, it's so evident in God's word that when Christ has done this work of salvation in you, it will bear fruits. And it's just the most natural thing that you want to conform as far as possible with what God has told us. And that is not just on the spiritual level, it is also on the physical level, because God is a creator of the whole body, soul and mind. So it's as simple as that.
Hitler was a vegetarian.
Really?
Yes,
yeah, so it's nothing salvational about being a vegetarian, that's for sure. Not a vegan either.
Put his mind plan evil.
Yeah. So maybe the devil is also a vegetarian.
He's vegan.
He's vegan. Maybe.
Smart enough to be vegan.
The point is that Hitler will not be saved.
Yeah,
but you know,
totally.
Satan's gone to low position.
It has shrunk.
Doesn't live in a way, or maybe because he hasn't used it. But which of the health principles has he broken?
Yeah, that's for sure.
When you break one, you break all.
Yeah, that's true. So at least we know he's broken that one. Good. Okay. So we're speaking about how the physical laws or the natural laws are also originated by God, and we're going to come more back to what those physical laws also are in a very practical sense. And this, of course, leads to the next point. Cause is followed by effect. So when sickness occurs, we can trace the cause and we can remove the cause. Because there is, I mean, if God has laid down certain laws in nature, then just like we read, you know, if you will obey these things, you know, the Lord will bless with health. And then vice versa, we have the whole chapter in Deuteronomy 28 about the blessings and the curses and how it is a cause and effect relationship with our habits and what we do, and then the results of that. Okay, for time's sake, I don't know if we should read this, but you can just write it down, two verses that brings out this principle about cause and effect. Proverbs 30 verse 33 and Matthew 12 33. I think in Proverbs 30 verse 33. Okay, no, I became so curious because I kind of forgot what it was, so I think I'll turn there anyways. so we turn there quickly. And it says that so that is the principle of cause and effect. For as the kerning of milk produces butter, and the wringing of nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. So we see that in all things there is a cause and effect relationship. And also in Matthew 12:33, it talks about that a good tree will bear good fruit, and a bad tree will bear bad fruit. So there is a cause and effect relationship that we see all throughout the Bible. Sorry?
There's another verse. The curse causes in the tongue.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was sitting here looking at that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, we need to add that
Exodus
one.
Exodus 20, verse 4.
Can you read it, Svanari?
It says, "You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or the earth beneath." It is the second commandment, actually. "You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation." You're talking about that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Mm. With cause and effect. But you were thinking of another one, maybe.
Curse,
but interesting.
The curse causeless shall not come. I believe it's still.
Yeah. Okay, we have to look that up. I'm very curious.
What I want.
The curse shall not come without cause.
Es habe eine Ursache.
Because that's interesting. Well, there is something, the way I live can affect my offspring.
That's true too.
Mm.
Exactly. That is true.
And I think this is what we're seeing more and more. You see, poor children have absolutely no fault at all.
Mm.
They're born alcoholics, some of them. They're born drug addicts.
Mm.
And it also affects their genetics.
Mm, exactly. So we do not only have a responsibility for ourselves, but we also have a responsibility
for our
offspring and also for other people. In connection with what you mentioned with James White that died prematurely, actually Ellen White says that, she talks about, you know, how they, actually it was relating to many of the pioneers, how they overworked. And she says that actually it was a sin in God's eyes because they were robbing others from the blessing they could have been to them. They were cutting short their life and robbing humanity from the blessing that they could have been to them for a long period of time.
I was shocked at how direct she was towards
her own husband. Me too, yeah. But, did you have your hand up, Pishka?
Yes, in Ministry of Healing, I believe, I was also astonished at how she writes about how the life of the mother affects the life of her baby. It's amazing in every aspect, not only a diet, because that I think we know that, oh, you have to take supplements and have enough of everything while you're pregnant. So, but it really says that when the mother is getting upset, even before the pregnancy,
it has an effect on
her.
Even when she's not pregnant.
It's amazing. It even goes into the milk after she's delivered.
True. Yeah. So anyways, in this first vision that Ellen White had in 1863, this is actually a quote from that one that is found in Spiritual Gifts, page 120. And it's in relation to this cause and effect. The human family have violated the laws of health and have run to excess in almost everything. Disease has been steadily increasing. The cause has been followed by the effect. And again, another one that you find in Councils for the Church, page 225, where it says, carefully consider your diet. Study from cause to effect. Cultivate self-control. Keep appetite under the control of reason. Never abuse the stomach by overeating, but do not deprive yourself of the wholesome, palatable food that health demands.
That's a very good
Quote,
yes. Because I think very often she writes about overeating because most people have that problem.
Yeah.
But I have not so often see her writing about that you are really also should give your body what it needs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because today that can be just as much a problem.
It is true.
For many people. So you can go into both extremes.
Exactly. And especially if you are conscientious, and if you want to do everything right. Mm. And then maybe, you know, it says you should eat less. And every time you read you should eat less, you eat less, you know. Then eventually you can deprive yourself of nutrients. Mm. And so it's very important to see this in a balanced way.
You can drown on both sides of the boat.
Yeah, that's true too. You can fall in both ditches, yeah. And but the point, of course, again, is this relationship between cause and effect, that when, for example, sickness occurs, there is always, you know, a reason for that, and that nature's way is basically to trace back, you know, and to see where there has been a breach, you know, and then restore that, and then health can be regained. This is another one from also the Spiritual Gifts, page 144. And it says that God will not work a miracle to keep those from sickness who have no care for themselves, but are continually violating the laws of health and make no efforts to prevent disease. When we do all we can on our part to have health, then may we expect that the blessed results will follow. And we can ask God in faith to bless our efforts for the preservation of health. So again, cause and effect, you know, in the positive way. When we do the things that God has asked us to do, and following the counsels that he has given us, then he will also, then we can also expect that these blessed results will follow. Of course, I think it is important to mention that we are living in a day and age, of course, where even the air and everything around us is infected somehow by sin, and that there are also things outside our own choices that can affect towards sickness, that can be genetic or that can be environmental and so forth. And it's important to take that into consideration, that not every time we see a deficiency or a sickness, we're like, oh man, you know, who sinned, him or his parents, you know, like they said to Jesus in the case of this man that was born blind. But still, the principle is that there is a reason, you know, and that we can, that we actually, it's actually in our hand to do something about health or sickness, you know, and that there is a relationship, cause and effect.
Also, definition of sin. Jesus mentions in John chapter 15 that if I would not have come to you, then you would not have had sin.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there might be things that people are doing without even knowing that it is actually sin against.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we shouldn't judge them,
mm-mm,
but we should still point out that, you know, it might still be the cause,
mm-mm,
but you're not to be blamed.
Ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good point, too. Very good, yeah. Okay. And then, yeah, so the second point, it was, you know, or the first point was about that cause is followed by effect, and that when sickness occurs, then we can trace and remove the cause. And then Deuteronomy talks about, you know, the, that if you, you do the things of God and he will bless, and, you know, this blesses and curses. And it's also in Matthew 23, you can find some of the same principle, 25 and 26. Ministry Healing, page 127, it says that in cases of sickness, the cause should be ascertained and helpful conditions should be changed, wrong habits corrected, and then nature is to be assisted in her effort to expel impurities and to re-establish right conditions in the system. So this is basically the next step of the, we understand relationship between cause and effect. So when sickness occurs, well, sure, you know, nature has somehow been abused and, you know, she has not been able to cope and sickness occurs, and then you need to trace back and to help nature to restore the thing so that health can again be reestablished. And also from Adventist Home, page 263, we find the same principle where it says that let parents study to find the causes or the sicknesses and then remedy the wrong conditions as soon as possible.
That's the perfect way to a real cure, those four steps.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So true. But then, sure, if sickness occurs, you want to trace and remove the cause in order to restore health. But even before that, prevention is better than cure. So you can always restore, but there is a better way, and that is, of course, to prevent. And in Proverbs 22, verse 3, we find a principle on prevention. Where it says that a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but a simple pass on and are punished. So it's like, you know, this principle that it's better to foresee it and avoid it and just to pass on and then, you know, be punished and to, yeah. And in manuscript 99, and that was written in 1902, we read that the distinction between prevention and cure has not been made sufficiently important. Teach the people that it is better to know how to keep well than how to cure disease. Our physicians should be wise educators, warning all against self-indulgency, showing that abstinence from the things that God has prohibited is the only way to prevent ruin of body and mind. And I think this is very needed also this with education, you know. We talked about how many people experience when they go to the doctor that they just get some painkillers or something that is just treating the symptoms or what they are suffering from. But what they really need is lifestyle education. They need to be educated how that this can be something that is sustainable, not just something that removes some pain for a moment, but actually in principle makes it even worse because it adds kind of poison to the body. But how they, with their lifestyle practices, can make permanent changes that can be lasting. And I mentioned, I think, in the first class how in this documentary, Forks Over Knives, that I thought that was really impressive to see, you know, how this young doctor couple was really, you know, being wise educators, and they would visit the people in their homes, they would take time with them, they would explain to them, they would show them cause to effect, and they would be shopping with them and making the food with them, and, you know, really taking the position as true educators. And I think...
They're not Adventists either.
No, they're not even Adventists, exactly. No, exactly, we were talking about that. And we have so much to learn, you know. Yeah, yeah.
But that's one thing that really impressed me. We also did the Wildwood. We saw this doctor that, you know, most physicians, they have the chance of making a lot of money in the States, especially. And he has said goodbye to all of them. He's at this institution. I listened to him on one of his tapes that our daughter is taking this course online, and the way he was explaining things was amazing.
Mm.
You hear this intelligent man
who
could have been making money hand over fist, being so humble and you know, using his time teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have made loads of money.
Yeah. And of course that makes an impression on the patients too. They know the fact, you know,
And often they are forced to earn so much money because they have so much debt.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Exactly. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. True. Okay.
And they have agreements with the pill companies, you know, the more pills they get, the more money they get from the companies.
It's crooked. Mm, that's true. Yeah, time is running from us. So I think we'll just rush through the very last points and then we'll open up for a little interaction, you know, with how we can implement this. I would wish we had even more time. So what are some of the natural remedies? We talked about lifestyle, and maybe I would put this as the first one because this is something, you know, it's not just about taking a herb in addition to just following along with your old lifestyle. Some they would promote that, just some, you know, natural pills or whatever, and then people just continue their lifestyle. I think the lifestyle changes, they are really the foundational, and we need to educate and to counsel people in that. But in addition, we know that the Bible and the spirit of prophecy also emphasizes that there are healing virtues that God has laid down in nature, like in herbs and in simple treatments. And this is from Ministry Healing, where we find these 8 laws of health that I think most of us are familiar with. Pure air, sunlight, abstemiousness, or temperance, rest, exercise, proper diet, and the use of water, trust in divine power, these are the true remedies. That was from... Yeah, exactly. It's so much contained in that. And
think about it, people in the cities, they can't really get it.
Hmm?
Talking about the mission field, the major cities, all these mentioned remedies...
Yeah.
Air, not there, sunlight,
yeah. So then you see the country living message.
Think about New York or
Chicago. True. Mm. Very true.
And yet, in a lifetime, I would dare say that pollution was probably even more prevalent because they were using coal.
Mm.
So there was this thick.
Yeah. And she writes about how every family should be educated how to use herbs in case of sickness. So that's about these herbs. These old-fashioned, simple herbs used intelligently, as she writes about.
How is it in Norway? Like you and your friends, do they know about it? Herbs?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we have some very good books. Like in Norway now, we have a book that is called Friska Urter, which has a lot. You know, that one is sold a lot from the canvassers.
It's written by 2 doctors.
Yeah, and it is a very good Oppslagsverk. It's a very good, you know, that you can help people with, even though you don't have every, you know, all the.
My question is if people my age, do they know about it in Norway?
No, in general not. No.
That's it. Even in church, I'm wondering,
that was the question. It's true.
And I think these 2 physicians, they're actually from a third world continent, or from the Middle East, I think, where they use a lot of herbs, you know, in preparing.
Because the Amish do it. I mean, whatever documentary you watch on the Amish movie, they always use tea.
Mm.
But how to get a hold of the herbs? Do you have to do it yourself? Can you buy it in the...
You can pick... Yeah. Many of them grow wild. Marikåpe, ryllik, pikpericum. Many of these herbs, they just grow wild in the Norwegian nature that we can use with very good benefits. And just in season, you just pick it and you dry it, or you, you know...
But pharmacies, do they sell it dry?
Some places you have some other herbs being sold, but it's far too little knowledge about it. But it's increasing actually in interest about it, though. But it's interesting what you said, like when we were in Africa, it was like this old like the old people there, they know about Jared's wife. She was like showing me, and she told her grandmother or something. She knew everything about all the herbs, and she had kind of passed it on. But now it's in danger that it's moving, going away because the dead. No, the dead people don't die. The old people die, and then sometimes the knowledge is being lost. You know, but it's yeah. So and. Then she also talks about, you know, how to use simple treatments and treatment. Then we're talking about things like hydrotherapy, massage, you know, different exercises, stretchings, charcoal, clay. You know, we could mention several of them. Actually, I want to write a lot about experiences with charcoal, for example, where she had amazing results. Holtzkohl. But we don't have the time to go into all those details. And then, of course, we have summarized these 8 health laws that sometimes they are given as the New Start or the God's Plan. It's different acronyms that are being used for that.
Yeah,
it's
the meat industry one.
Yeah, that's true. But it starts with godly trust. And it is really the foundation because if the mental, like Elmar says, you know, 9 out of 10 diseases start, it starts the foundation in the mind. So if the trust aspect is not there, you know, then it's hard to just, you know, patch on the other things without having that foundation. So it's, anyways, so I was planning actually to go shortly through that and to share some insights, but we don't have the time for that now. And the few minutes that we have left, I want us to take to just brainstorm very efficiently and think about how, just very practically, how can we apply these things, you know, in our life or in our situation, like even some of the things we talked about already, you know, in the situation you are in, you know. So just a few thoughts, you know, just some few inputs. You okay?
That's a very interesting statement. Life, she says, with practice, medical missionary work at the table.
Yeah.
But eating right, then we are doing that work for ourselves, but we are also preparing ourselves to be able to help others when we sit at the table. So that's, in a way, that's where it, you know, in one sense, that's where it starts.
Good thought.
Yeah, something that I think is lacking here, at least in Europe, would be some real academic training for those who are interested. I mean, we should not stop at this only. We should continue and dig deeper and deeper and deeper, actually, for practical knowledge. And I would love to see something being organized, let's say, like a conference for people interested in these topics. Just, you know, wholly devoted to this, and actually for me to come there and know, for this disease I know this treatment, or for this disease I know this treatment. So, you know, really direct information. It would also be very good to have.
Totally. It's very true.
Yeah, last night we were very talking true. About what we can do in Germany, and then we figured that the knowledge of that right arm of the gospel, the health message and health expos, it's happening, but it's still, if you do a research, it's, I guess, only like maybe 5 to 20% of the church know about it. And then first we want to like teach it to the churches in order to be able to go out and like spread the word with health experts. The church needs it first. I mean,
the
condition in Germany is a little bit like we have church potluck and it's always like you walk by there with a smile and like, can't eat this. We still got meat in our church, so it's
won't eat it.
Huh?
Won't eat it. I won't eat it.
Yeah, I'm not eating it.
You can't eat it, but you won't eat it.
Okay, yeah.
Like
it's
suddenly protection.
That's our plan, like the Zwicker's, like Zwicker family from Switzerland. And so yeah, you have a big task not only in Norway, Serbia, also in all of Europe.
I know the one who started Health Expo first, and she was a little bit distraught at how, you know, she's a nurse, and she has spent a lot of time developing the Health Expo concept. She and her husband and their son, who's also a physician. And after it was taken over by some new people, they have cut out you know, the educational aspect of all these points here, you know, trust in divine power and error and things like that. They, in all these posters, they had, it was educational. You could read why, you could read, you know, of things that had been discovered along with these things. All that is cut out, and it's just, you're just left with the, you know, points. And it doesn't say as much. Mm-hmm. Well, I said you should educate.
Which says, to go thorough and deep and to also not just state the things but to come with an explanation
The Health Expo has been a very big blessing on these impacts.
Oh, totally. Yeah, for sure.
And I was thinking just last evening how Galette was telling me about, you know, how excited she was by and it should actually be presented in that kind of a setting.
Mm-hmm.
It should be part of the... Well, I think he was very excellent.
The thing is, because I had the experience like one day on the street, I was talking to a young girl, and I said, do you actually know that like these are the principles that they are good for you? And she said, well, you're not telling me anything new. And so it's like, you know, I mean, if you tell people that sun is good for them, I'm laughing about myself now, like looking back, because I was so stupid. I mean, you're like, yeah, well, the meaning behind it, you know, if sun is good, do you make sure that you expose yourself to sun enough? If fresh air is good, do you make sure, blah, blah, blah? And so that's basic knowledge about new stuff, or as you say, God's plan, yeah. So maybe you can use your presentation to, teach it to the young people.
And to go deeper.
Should keep on digging deeper. That's so valuable.
That's true.
And many times the young people, when you talk to them on the street, they may know it, but they're not going to change until they know exactly why. And how the molecules and the receptors or whatever in the body, how it's connected, and then maybe then they start thinking about it.
Or get sick.
Yes.
That's it. When people wake up.
It's so easy in church, like, you know, how these new self principles are good, but who knows the connection? I mean, why is exercise, what does exercising do to the body? What does sunlight do to the body? I can't explain that.
I guess we don't tell.
Noek says about education, she said we should learn. It's all coming back. What I studied in college, that's strange. You know, I haven't thought about it for years. But she says that we should train the people, even the church members, to understand how each part of the body works, and how the one is dependent on the other, how they interact with each other. You know, to be intelligent as to...
Yeah.
Because we know these things. Yeah. I mean, science knows about it. It's just...
Like in the book of education, it talks about the importance of physiology and how you need to, you know how your body works.
The majority of us have also heard the quote from Sister White, where she says that the only way by which we'll be able to support ourselves in the time of trouble will be by medical missionary work. So not for us to get actually money from the people, but you know, we will be in such a despised state that people won't pay us, but they might give us an apple or something for it. The way you're acting.
That's what they do.
That's the thing. Why start when the trouble comes?
It's a part of the curriculum, that we go more into the depth of the eight health laws and also explain why and what is actually happening. And then also nutrition as a whole is like 30 hours or so on nutrition, and physiology and anatomy and massage and and disease and treatment. Okay, so unfortunately time is up. So we'll close with a word of prayer together. And Sven Arvid, maybe you want to, do you want to close with a prayer with us?
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.